This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
The European Central Bank disappoints. Hi, I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. This is the Marketplace Midday Update for Thursday, August 2nd. Coming up, in addition to all the news out of Europe, where the European Central Bank did not come through on some high promises to investors that it would do whatever it could to save the euro, we're also going to talk about some losses at some big electronics companies in Japan. And here in this country, we've got some new polling data about what Americans are looking for in the next president. It's all coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
The word stimulus keeps sneaking back into the economic conversation, both at home and abroad. Yesterday, of course, the Fed decided it would continue to hold off on any new action for now. And today, the head of the European Central Bank, Mario Draghi, spoke at a press conference in Frankfurt. Global markets were hanging on his every word, waiting to see whether Draghi would announce new stimulus measures after saying last week that he'd do whatever it takes to save the euro. Well, here's what he said.
The Governing Council, within its mandate to maintain price stability over the medium term and in observance of its independence in determining monetary policy, may undertake outright open market operations of a size adequate to reach its objective.
To help translate that into plain English for us, we've got Diane Swonk. She's chief economist with Mesirow Financial, and she's with us from Chicago, as she is every Thursday. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, so exactly what did he just say, and what is he saying here?
It's not clear at all. He's saying that, inflation, they expect it to decelerate, so under their mandate, they can go ahead and do additional stimulus. And he's saying we're not sure when and we're not sure how we're going to do it, but maybe over the next couple of weeks, we might figure that out.
Well, why would he come out with such a complex statement that doesn't say much after saying last week, as we said, that he'd do whatever it takes to save the euro? Everybody's watching him. Why wouldn't he come out with something clear, simple, and strong?
That's a good question, but the reality is there's a lot of stumbling blocks to actually use open market operations with the ECB to buy bonds directly. They can buy bonds in the secondary market, but there are these facilities set up to fund those periphery countries, the ESM and the EFSS, the ESFS. There's so many different things now. We don't know what they're all called. They are set up with a lot of rules that have to be complied in order to give a loan to these countries that are in debt and to help them out. And it's not clear how the ECB could work around them or through them to do what they want to do.
Well, is this something that is going to have an impact in the United States, the fact that it was a disappointing statement from Draghi?
Well, certainly the markets aren't liking it at the moment, and the reality is that the last firewall in Europe right now is the ECB. We don't have a strong enough firewall. The ECB could expand its balance sheet enough to actually convince markets that the euro, they're going to buy enough time for European leaders to get together on the euro. But the reality is, until they tell us how much they're willing to provide on that firewall and when they're going to do it and how they're going to do it, we're sort of sitting there going, scratching our heads going, are you really going to save the euro or are you not?
Well, and of course, this comes just a day after the Fed came out and basically said, we're going to hang back too for the moment and not do any new stimulus right now.
Yes, but the Fed has been much more clear about how they might do more stimulus and what they think they need in order to trigger that additional stimulus. There's some confusion about that, but at the end of the day, they did say very clearly, you know, they would be willing, they have said they would be willing to expand their balance sheet if necessary to keep the economy going. And we know how they would do that. They would likely buy mortgage-backed securities, and they would likely look at the housing market as one of their tools beyond the Treasury market.
Diane Swonk, chief economist with Mesirow Financial, thank you so much.
Thank you.
On Capitol Hill today, a House committee is looking into the effects of the Supreme Court's ruling on health care, specifically just how the IRS will be able to tax people who don't carry health insurance. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has more.
The IRS will assess whether people and businesses owe money for not having insurance. And it'll provide income and household data so the new health insurance exchanges can determine whether people are eligible for subsidies to pay their premiums. Republican Representative Scott Desjarlais of Tennessee says this goes too far.
It gives unprecedented power to the IRS. Now they're having to collect data from all the companies, plus it's going to involve more information than people have had to give in the past.
But Henry Aaron at the Brookings Institution insists this is not a new mandate for the IRS.
There's a long history of asking individuals for information about their income or even their net worth, their assets, for them to qualify for federal programs.
And Aaron says the IRS has precious little enforcement power if you fail to pay the tax for not carrying insurance. It can deduct the amount from your refund, but it can't dock your wages to get the money. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
In Japan, there are two big electronics companies reporting disappointing earnings this morning. Sony says it lost $316 million last quarter, and Sharp announced a $1.2 billion loss, which was much worse than expected. To help explain what's going on, we're joined from Tokyo now by the BBC's Mariko Oi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with Sony reporting another loss, and this time it's probably a little more difficult to blame the after effects of the tsunami, right?
Indeed. The company has been having quite a few challenges. Its TV business isn't doing too well, other bits and pieces not being profitable. So even though the company has the new CEO who has said that he's committed to turn around the business, the company said that it would probably make less money than it originally hoped. But because the company had its record loss of almost $6 billion last year, I guess if the company manages to make even a small profit, that could be considered a turnaround.
Well, it's not just Sony, though. There's also Sharp reporting a real drop in earnings today as well.
That's right. Sharp posting a huge loss, and it also said that it is going to cut 5,000 jobs for the first time in more than five decades. Sony has also been cutting thousands of jobs. Japanese electronics companies haven't really been able to keep up with the competition in all kinds of areas, including TV, smartphones, and other areas.
Well, and I know that both Sony and Sharp are also blaming the strength of the Japanese yen, which, of course, is something that the Japanese government has tried to deal with, to try to weaken the yen so that exports can grow a little bit more. Why hasn't that worked?
Well, I guess investors continue to love buying the Japanese yen. They see it as safer than, say, compared to the euro. That's really bad news, especially for Sony, because Sony gets about a fifth of its revenues from Europe. So the strength of the Japanese yen against the euro has been particularly bad news for them.
The BBC's Mariko Oi in Tokyo. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Today, Freddie Mac will tell us what the average interest rate is right now on a 30-year fixed mortgage. Last week, that number fell below 3.5% for the first time in 60 years of record keeping. Add that to all the talk that we've hit the bottom of the housing market, and you might ask, are we about to head on our way back up and have home prices rise again? Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell joins us now with his take. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So, Chris, do you think that the housing market has hit bottom, as many people are saying right now?
Oh, I believe it has hit bottom. But here's the thing, Jeremy. Don't believe those real estate agents when they say it's hit bottom and it's going to rebound. The market is going to be flat for a long time to come.
Wait, so you think that it's hit the bottom, but it's not going to start to come back up again?
That's right, because for one reason, I just don't see a lot of net new household formation, which is the big driver in the housing market. It's been running at about 600,000 to 800,000 for the past couple of years. And Jeremy, we haven't seen numbers this low since the 1940s, and I don't see it changing anytime soon.
But the economy is slowly getting better. I mean, slowly but surely, job growth is coming back, albeit a weaker pace than many would like. But also, you've got mortgage rates at very low levels. I mean, why wouldn't the housing market start to rebound?
Two big reasons. The reason why there's less household formation is lots of young people are living in their parents' basement. And, you know, this economy is doing better, but it's not doing great. There's not a lot of great income growth. There's not a lot of good jobs out there. So they're going to move very slowly out of that basement. And then immigrants. Immigrants are big buyers. They want a stake in this country, but immigrant buying has really fallen. And I don't see that changing anytime soon either.
Well, what's it going to take then, Chris, to get this housing market to rebound?
You know, people are looking so much at the housing market, and they're forgetting to look at the other side of the equation, income growth. All right, so yes, house prices are down 35% since the bubble burst, but there's been no real growth in income. In fact, median household income, real median household income adjusted for inflation, is down by more than 8% over the past decade. So we need to see some real income growth before people start thinking housing is affordable.
Marketplace Economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thanks as always.
Thanks a lot, Jeremy.
Well, the housing recovery is no doubt one of the issues that have President Obama and Mitt Romney staying awake at night as the general election draws closer and closer. And they might be tossing and turning tonight, awaiting tomorrow's July jobs report from the Labor Department. Which brings us to Attitude Check, our weekly partnership with the polling firm Gallup.
And the latest poll numbers suggest margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said.
Frank Newport is editor-in-chief at Gallup, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, you know, we've heard about foreign policy, immigration, all kinds of things from the candidates. What is the number one concern of Americans at this point?
Well, this may come as no great shock, but it is creating good jobs. At least that's what we found when we gave Americans a long list recently and say how important should each of these be as a priority for the next president. And at the very bottom of the list, by the way, was increasing taxes on wealthy Americans.
And when it comes to job creation, do Americans have a sense of what either candidate would do and which they prefer?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we said, aha, we'll ask the public that, because particularly for Mitt Romney, he hasn't been in the public sphere nationally. He's been in Massachusetts. So we said, do they even understand what he or Obama would do? And in terms of understanding very well, no. Only 29% of Americans say they have a very good understanding of what Obama would do, and 21% a very good understanding of what Romney would do to create jobs if they're reelected or elected next November. However, you've got another 30, 39% who say they have a somewhat well understanding. So it depends on how you look at it. But in terms of a full understanding of what they would do, it's a low number.
All right. Well, before we let you go, Frank, I hear you've got some new polling data regarding coffee.
Ah, what percent of Americans drink coffee? What would you say? What number would you guess?
Oh, probably 99.5.
That's because you're up in the morning. It's actually just 64%.
Wow.
Drink at least one cup a day. And, you know, we had asked that same question back in 1999, and it was 63%. So despite the proliferation of Starbucks and coffee houses everywhere in America, we're really not drinking any more coffee now than we used to. The average coffee drinker, by the way, drinks 2.5 cups of coffee a day. How's that for a number?
That sounds good. Have you had your 2.5 cups yet today?
Not yet. I've had about 0.8 of a cup so far this morning. But as soon as we're through here, I'll go finish out my 2.5 for the day.
Excellent. Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at Gallup, thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Well, to let us know how many cups of coffee you have each day, whether it's no coffee at all, one cup, two cup, or too many to count, you can go to our Marketplace Facebook page and let us know. Well, despite worries about the economy, the 2012 campaigning continues full steam ahead. President Obama will be in the Orlando area today for a campaign event. Now, Central Florida has become a big fundraising destination, both for the president and for Mitt Romney. Marketplace's David Gura explains why.
One of Orlando's biggest Democratic fundraisers is a lawyer named John Morgan.
Without being overly dramatic, the I-4 corridor will decide whether Obama or Romney wins.
I-4 is a highway in this important swing state that goes from Daytona Beach to Tampa, and it cuts right through Orlando. That area is home to a lot of independent voters and donors with deep pockets. Donald Davison teaches political science at Rollins College.
Historically, real estate developers are a very significant source of contributors.
They tend to give to Republicans. Davison's colleague at Rollins, Rick Fogelsong, says Democrats have a big base here, too.
African-American athletes.
Lawyer John Morgan has hosted fundraisers with NBA stars Patrick Ewing, Grant Hill, and Vince Carter. Terry Fine teaches political science at the University of Central Florida, and she says the area is seeing a lot of new money.
Because the community is constantly growing, there's sort of room for more people to sort of wedge their way in.
Which is good news for candidates in both parties. In Orlando, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
And finally to Australia, where the finance minister has an unusual economic hero. Not Milton Friedman or John Maynard Keynes, but rather Bruce Springsteen. Finance Minister Wayne Swan says Springsteen saw what many economists missed with his songs about the collapse of the New Jersey construction industry and the closure of small town stores. So, Tim Geithner, if you're listening, here is some important economic information. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.